Today's case took place in 2018, when a car accident involving three young men ended the lives of a mother and daughter. However, one of the accused caused a furore on social media due to his striking appearance. Today, we will talk about the death of Jessica Raubenault, her daughter Lilia, and the online movement calling for Cameron Herrin's freedom, just because of his good looks. Cameron Herrin was born on September 9, 1999, in Texas, United States. He lived with his parents, Christopher and Cheryl Herrin, a financially successful couple, and his older brother, Tristan. Christopher worked as an editor and filmmaker, and Cheryl was a vice president at an insurance company. In 2005, the family moved to Tampa, Florida. Cameron attended Tampa Catholic High School. On April 21, 2018, the family purchased a Ford Mustang GT 5.0, a luxurious 460 horsepower sports car, which can accelerate to high speeds very quickly. The black Mustang was registered in Cheryl's name, but was actually given to Cameron as a gift for his high school graduation. The 18-year-old boy received his dream car from his parents and enthusiastically showed it off to his friends. A month later, on May 23, 2018, just 2 days after the graduation ceremony, Cameron, his brother Tristan, and their 17-year-old friend John Barino were working out at the gym. After a quick training session, the three boys left in two vehicles. Cameron drove the Mustang with Tristan in the passenger seat. John drove his gold Nissan Altima. After traveling a short distance, the two cars stopped side by side at a red traffic light. They were on Bayshore Boulevard, one of the main seaside avenues in the city, which tends to have a lot of vehicular and pedestrian traffic. The boys looked at each other and decided to race. When the traffic light turned green, the vehicles took off and soon reached high speed along the busy avenue. They swerved through the traffic, narrowly avoiding other cars, alternately accelerating fast and braking abruptly. Elsewhere on Bayshore Avenue, a mother was out walking, pushing her young daughter along in a stroller. They were Jessica Reisinger Raubenault, 24, and baby Lilia, 21 months. They lived in Ohio and were on vacation in Florida, staying at Jessica's uncle's house. Her husband and Lilia's father, David Raubenault, was also in Florida, but he had not accompanied them on their walk because he was resolving some documentation issues regarding his aviation pilot's license. David and Jessica were a young, happy couple. They had met at university, fell in love, and started dating. After completing her university studies, Jessica became pregnant, and little Lilia was born in 2016. They married that same year. That day, Jessica and her daughter had gone to the park, walked around the city, and visited the sea. Jessica decided to return to her uncle's house and wait for David. She walked along the sidewalk of Bayshore Avenue, and when she reached the intersection with W. Knights Avenue, a legal crossing point for pedestrians, she stepped out onto the road. It was at that moment that all the lives mentioned thus far crossed paths and changed forever. Cameron, at 18 years old, driving his Mustang, hit Jessica and her daughter Lilia. The two were thrown several meters from the impact site. Jessica was thrown 12 meters and landed on a lawn next to the avenue. She was bleeding profusely and could not move. As she was about to lose consciousness, she gathered the little strength she had to ask for her daughter. Little Lilia lay 20 meters away. Her condition was very serious. Immediately, a crowd formed at the appalling scene. Many called emergency services to summon help and others were simply in despair at such a tragic situation. Ambulances and paramedics arrived quickly. Cameron, John, and Tristan remained at the scene. While the victims received first aid, Cameron sat down on the lawn next to the avenue. His complexion was pale, and he was crying profusely. A large crowd of reporters, police officers, rescuers, and passers-by had formed. Cameron, John, and Tristan were arrested at the scene. They were handcuffed and taken away in a police vehicle. Meanwhile, the mother and daughter were rushed to Tampa General Hospital. On admission, Jessica, already passed out at the scene of the accident, was officially declared dead. Lilia arrived at the hospital alive, but with a serious brain injury. In the meantime, David had completed his commitments for the day. On the way back to Jessica's uncle's house, he called his wife to tell her he was on his way, but Jessica didn't answer the call. On his arrival at the house, there was no one there. He called his wife again, without success. David began to worry and decided to take a walk around the area to see if he could find his wife and daughter, and actually passed the place where the accident occurred. When he saw the crowd of police officers and people, he had a terrible premonition. He got a little closer and saw the dented baby carriage. He spoke to a police officer who confirmed his greatest fear. His wife and daughter were seriously injured and had been taken to hospital. In desperation, David received help from a witness to the accident. The witness took him by car to the hospital, as he was in no condition to drive. Arriving at the hospital, David received the terrible news of his wife's death and his daughter's critical condition. After a dark night in a hospital corridor, David broke down when he learned that Lilia had also passed away. John and Cameron, who were driving the cars, were accused of serious crimes: double vehicular homicide, with a penalty of up to 15 years in prison for each death, in addition to also facing lesser charges, such as misdemeanor street racing and reckless driving resulting in serious bodily injury. Tristan, the passenger in the Mustang, was also charged with misdemeanor street racing. Both brothers were released on bail the day after the accident. John Barrino remained in prison for 22 days until he was also released on bail. The charge against Tristan, who was not driving either vehicle, was later permanently dropped. The Heron family hired the renowned defense attorney John Fitzgibbons to represent Cameron. His strategy was to postpone the trial in court for as long as possible, hoping that the general commotion among the public and the local press would diminish over time. To do this, he tried to disqualify evidence, brought multiple motions to the court, and employed other measures to delay. Furthermore, he prevented any interview or statement by the family to the press. He alone spoke on the Heron family's behalf. When asked about the various maneuvers to delay the trial, he stated all he could say was that investigations were ongoing. There was no alcohol or drugs involved in the case. The cars had immediately stopped at the scene, and none of those involved had fled. The Heron family was suffering terribly, and he also recognized that the families of the victims were going through unimaginable pain. During the course of the investigation, it was expertly proven that, moments before the collision, Cameron was driving at a speed in excess of 170 kilometers per hour, twice the limit permitted on that road at the time. Witnesses stated that the two vehicles were in fact competing in a race, driving both recklessly and dangerously. Furthermore, it was found that Cameron had a history of breaking the speed limit at other locations and on other dates. In other words, exceeding the speed limit was his usual behavior. Amid the great commotion surrounding the tragedy, some members of the local Tampa community said that Cheryl and Chris Heron were loving parents. that they had raised their children with dedication and that them were good boys. Other people were emphatic in blaming and condemning those responsible for the homicides, stating that they were irresponsible and that the parents had colluded in their children's irresponsibility. The unquestionable fact is that this tragedy killed both mother and daughter and devastated an entire family. Jessica was described as a loving, kind, cheerful person who liked to help everyone around her. She was a dedicated wife and mother, and Lilia was a beautiful, happy, smart child with her whole life ahead of her. The months passed, and the victim's family, with the support of the Tampa community, worked hard to ensure that the tragedy was not forgotten and that some kind of justice could be served. While they waited for the court date to be set, there were demonstrations to reduce speed limits, vigils, and protests against the delay of the trial of defendants. In December 2019, more than a year and a half after his family was tragically killed, David requested a hearing with the trial judge to talk about the delay. "My name is David William Raubenalt. I am the father of Lilia and the husband of Jessica Raubenalt. I am the remaining survivor from the extinction for the Raubenalt family and bloodline, since the unspeakable and terrifying death of my wife and daughter. I've suffered horrifically every moment. It's nearly impossible to put into words the agony of this legal process and the profound drama it has caused, increased exponentially every day that these defendants are not in prison. We have suffered through birthdays, anniversaries. I have not had the privilege to enjoy these precious moments with my family. However, the men who killed our two beautiful and irreplaceable girls most likely have been able to. I would like the court to recognize that during this time we are suffering with no end in sight. The torment and terror caused by the fact that they are not in prison yet does not feel survivable to me. I will not use the word unfair because it pales in comparison to what this lengthy judicial process has been for our families and myself. It is difficult to describe the hopelessness and defeat of laying in that hospital bed near the brink of death, and knowing the people that killed my family are still not in prison." Jessica's father, Bob Riesinger, also spoke, expressing his frustrations. "It's clear to me that the accused, with the assistance of their legal representatives, are trying to delay being held accountable for their decisions and actions of May 23, 2018. Next week, the accused will be spending their second Christmas at home, while our families spend our second Christmas without Jess and Lilia. This doesn't feel right to me. As a victim of crime of this nature, it is very difficult to move forward without criminal justice being served. Unfortunately, due to the defense's strategy of delay and the global quarantine situation, many months would pass before the trial's start date was finally confirmed. It was set for December 2020, more than 2.5 years after the event. The trial of John, the driver of the Altima, was held first. As he was 17 years old at the time and did not strike any of the victims, it is worth noting here that in the United States, the minimum legal age to drive is 16 years old, but the minimum age to be arrested as an adult is 18. The prosecutor offered him a plea deal. If he pleaded guilty to the lesser crimes and testified against Cameron, the double vehicular homicide charge would be dropped, and he would only be charged with participating in illegal street racing and inflicting grievous bodily harm, in addition to several other lesser crimes and misdemeanors. John accepted the deal and was sentenced to 6 years in prison, followed by 15 years of probation, plus 200 hours of community service. Cameron's trial was much more complex. He was already 18 years old when the events occurred, and he was driving the vehicle which struck the victims. His trial began on January 4th, 2021. The prosecution did not offer a plea deal, and if convicted, Cameron could have faced up to 30 years in prison for double homicide. Cameron's defense based its strategy on a few key points. The first would be to treat the hit and run as an isolated incident. Cameron had no criminal record. To defend this point, friends, relatives, and former teachers were called as witnesses, all attesting that Cameron was a good boy, kind, cheerful, with a good heart and good behavior. Cheryl, Cameron's mother, was called as a defense witness.
Ian.
Hey, você se interessa por crimes reais, serial killers, coisas macabras e tem um senso de humor um tanto quanto sórdido? Se sim, você não está sozinho.
Se você precisa de um lugar recheado de pessoas como você, venha conhecer o podcast Pátria Amada Criminal.
Todas as semanas tentamos entender o pior da humanidade.
Nesse processo a gente ri, chora, fica brava, fofoca, porque afinal de contas é assim que a gente fala quando está entre amigos.
Suas novas melhores amigas trevosas estão aqui no Pátria Amada Criminal.
April of 2018, my husband and I gave Cameron a new car for his high school graduation. It was a black Mustang, as you have mentioned several times. We gave Tristan a brand new truck for his high school graduation. That was what we did as parents, is we gave them a new car or a new truck, whatever they, not whatever, but a what was reasonable that we could afford. On May 23rd, 2018, less than a month later, I received a frantic, distressed call from Cameron. And he told me he had been involved in an accident. And it was clear to me that he was crying. And I kept him on the phone until I could get to the scene, helping him work his way through it. I said, you know, it's gonna be okay, I promise you, I'm on my way. And we talked that time, and it took me less than 5 minutes to get to the scene of the accident. And he said, Mom, I've killed someone. And I said, no, Cameron, it's just, at that point, it wasn't even clear to me how the accident had, what had taken place. I said, no, Cameron, no, you're mistaken. It's gonna be okay. And I got to the scene of the accident, and they had Tristan and Cameron and John Barino, you know, in that middle part, the median part of the of Bayshore. And Tristan was sitting against a tree crying. John Barino was sitting on the curb with his head in his hands crying. And Cameron was on his hands and knees throwing up and crying. I feel responsible for this accident, and I accept full accountability for my actions. If I could, I would step in front of Cameron and I would accept the punishment that you might render. That's how strong I feel about my involvement or my actions that led to this accident, perhaps. When Cameron and Tristan were finally released from jail after the accident, their father had, Chris, had to sleep upstairs with in the spare bedroom because they were so distraught. This went on for several weeks, and I can only describe it as like a PTSD, and I'm not a doctor, I'm not trying to diagnose, but I mean, what I saw was both of them were so impacted and affected by this accident. They saw and continue to see the accident play over and over and over in their heads, and I would hear screams at night from both of either of the boys as they were having these nightmares. They had anxiety attacks and panic attacks. This past almost 3 years has been the hardest thing I've ever gone through. And the hardest thing our family, the four of us, have had to go through. I'm sorry. And over these almost 3 years, Cameron has continued to show extreme remorse. He's, some have described him as a shell of what he used to be. And that's a true statement. He's lost so much weight. He doesn't eat, he doesn't sleep. We've had to seek help from a therapist who's worked with us. And I have attended almost every single one of those sessions. While not always in there, but I was there to support Cameron. He continues to suffer from the nightmares, and that I you know, wasn't there, but the impact plays over and over in his head. It'll never go away. And he's going to have to figure out a way to live with this for the rest of his life. And I can't tell you, there's this point where the risk of suicide has been very true, and Chris and I have both tried, and Tristan, have tried our hardest to circle around him and make sure that suicide isn't a part of our lives. He's got so much to live for, even though he made a terrible, terrible mistake. It's tragic. But he's got a lot to live for, and he will be able, and I know he's going to spend the rest of his life carrying this memory, but he's committed to working towards retribution for his actions. And his father and I are committed to supporting him in this effort, however we can, whether it be financially, emotionally, or spiritually. We are very remorseful, very sorrowful, and regretful for what happened. We offer our sincerest apologies to the two families, the Mr. Robino and the Reisinger family. We hope all of you can find room in your hearts to forgive everyone that was involved in this accident, not just the Herons, but the Baranos as well. It was an accident. It was an intentional act. It was just a tragedy, a tragic accident.
Another strategic pillar of the defense was to assert that Cameron was a boy, still young, and therefore still immature and incapable of adequately evaluating the consequences of his actions. To support this argument, the defense called as a witness a psychiatrist who specialized in youth mental health. This medical expert would present scientific evidence to prove that, at 18 years of age, the human brain is not completely developed with regard to issues such as self-accountability, self-control, prudence, and decision-making. The complete development of the brain faculties only occurs, according to the specialist, at 25 years of age. It is worth mentioning that the doctor who gave this testimony was Cameron and his family's assistant psychiatrist, having carried out around 30 to 40 consultation sessions with him.
This is why we have the common sense social understanding that we hear all the time of, how could he do something so stupid? He's a bright kid. It is because the stop and think part of the brain, the frontal lobe, where we stop and think about our action, is not developed in young adolescent boys, men of his age and circumstances.
As a last point of defense, Cameron's lawyer stated that there were no reasons for Cameron to be given the maximum sentence requested by the prosecution, as the boy did not represent a future threat to society, and that he would clearly regret his actions for the rest of his life. He was committed to making reparations for the harm he caused by actively raising awareness among young people about the risks of reckless driving. In short, Cameron's defense downplayed the whole issue, claiming that he had simply made a mistake, that he'd never intended to cause harm, that he was just a boy and was not capable of assessing the severity, the consequences of driving at high speed. It was all a terrible accident. The prosecution countered the defense that the collision was an accident and presented evidence that proved Cameron had not made a once-off error. Data from the Mustang's black box recorded him speeding not only on the day of the collision, but on several dates previously. In fact, one of the records indicated that he had been driving at an alarming speed of 260 kilometers per hour. For the prosecution, Cameron had consistently and repeatedly taken conscious risks by driving at excessive speeds, participating in illegal races on urban roads, and should be now held responsible for the consequences of his actions under the law. Regarding the scientific testimony of the psychiatrist who testified for the defense, instead of opposing the statement about the immaturity of the brain formation of an 18-year-old young man, the prosecution agreed with the expert's opinion. But they pointed out that at 18 years of age, the individual is already perfectly capable of discerning right from wrong, what is permitted or prohibited, what is legal or illegal. Children are, from an early age, taught indirectly at school and by their families about traffic laws and safe driving. At driving school, these teachings are reinforced. Therefore, when choosing to drive on public roads at excessive speed, the individual is aware that they are breaking the law and putting their lives and those of other people at risk. One of the most emotional moments of the trial was when the prosecution called Pamela Reisinger, Jessica's mother and Lilia's grandmother, to speak in court. Her moving statements brought many of those present and spectators who followed the trial on TV or on the internet to tears.
Hey, você se interessa por crimes reais, serial killers, coisas macabras e tem senso de humor tanto quanto sórdido? Se sim, você não está sozinho.
Se você precisa de lugar recheado de pessoas como você, venha conhecer o podcast Pátria Amada Criminal.
Todas as semanas tentamos entender o pior da humanidade.
Nesse processo a gente ri, chora, fica brava, fofoca, porque afinal de contas é assim que a gente fala quando está entre amigos.
Suas novas melhores amigas trevosas estão aqui no Pátria Amada Criminal.
There is. We've heard a lot today about qualities in a person. And my daughter and my granddaughter possessed all those qualities too. There, you say actions speak louder than words. They were active in what they presented in their life. Jessica went on several mission trips. She started programs in Girl Scouts. She got her Gold Award. They say right to life, she had that baby. Every action she did was kind and whole. The words she wore in her shirts, the bracelets she wore represented who she was. Her graduation cap was all about love and kindness. And when I hear about listening to your child wake up with screams in the middle of the night for a few months, we're going on 3 years and we hear those screams. They can comfort their child. They can go to them and hug them. I go to a closet and sniff a t-shirt. I go to a baby picture and stroke her cheeks to comfort her. You hear about remorse and regret and their sympathy. And when they say that they wish they could switch places with them, and we all know that's not possible, if you're willing to switch places with them, why aren't you willing to do your sentence? It's still your life. We hear about 18-year-old boys that are careless and boneheaded by his teacher's words, not of Cameron, but of other students. And that Cameron was bright. I've raised two sons that were 18-year-olds, and yes, they might have been a little immature, but they know consequences. I'm a preschool teacher, and my 4- and 5-year-old class has mostly boys. Yes, they're a little more immature. But it's our duty, it's our job to teach them how to learn the rules, how to function in society, and that consequences are always there. I think we do a huge disservice to our society if we aren't willing to teach those lessons. You know, we have our faith too. We also are Catholics. And I do believe that there is still forgiveness, but I also believe that there's a price to pay. I think the city of Tampa, when they had the memorial, but afterwards we had to watch for the rooftop because there were so many families there and babies and strollers. I think they were calling for justice, calling for their safety and their family safety. You know, we also have a perspective on this. So I don't want to seem that I don't feel for the Heron family. I do. But their perspective on what they've lost can't compare to two sweet souls crossing the street coming home from a parking lot. They weren't residents here. The Herons are residents here. They drove up that street every day. I can't believe that living in that area, there wasn't an awareness that people cross that street. There wasn't an awareness that those speeds kill. That's why we have speed limits. It's for all of our safeties, and if we don't abide by that, what are we telling our community? I really have nothing else to say.
David, Jessica's widower and Lilia's father, was called and gave a very impactful speech. For 45 minutes, he spoke of his deep and constant suffering and speaking directly to Cameron, held him responsible for the fatal consequences of his recklessness. David ended his speech by appealing to the court judge, asking that Cameron be given the maximum sentence of 30 years in prison.
Your Honor, I respect your power. I'm humbled by your power. And at times fearful. I hate to beg, but I beg you for the ultimate sentence, which is 30 years in prison, 15 years for each count, for two beautiful lives that had many more years to live. At 24 years old, you wouldn't want to be killed by a car. The autopsy report explains in detail those injuries. I believe if you've ever gotten the wind knocked out of you, You could hardly compare the pain that she must have felt as she let go from this earth. It's the only way that she was to leave, because she loved life so much. Your Honor, I firmly understand that this is a difficult day and a very difficult decision for you to make. I just hope that you understand that you would have wanted Jesse and Lilia in your family as well. They would have brought much joy to you. And I hope you take into consideration her soul, because it was very pure, sir. Thank you so much for your time and your resources in helping us out in the state of Florida and trying to convict you with a proper sentence, which is the maximum. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Any other questions? That's all. No more questions.
On April 8th, 2021, the judge handed down his sentence. He apologized for the delay in the entire process and stated that this was a particularly difficult case because there was nothing a court could do to repair the harm caused. He highlighted that, although there was no clear direct intention to harm the victims, there was a clear and direct intention to drive illegally, and therefore there was a need to assume responsibility for the risks involved. He explained that the damage caused by the defendant was the greatest damage possible, the loss of a mother and a child, the end of an entire family. He further added that the defendant's history of speeding contributed decisively to the sentence set. Based on these explanations, and considering other mitigating and aggravating factors, Cameron Herrin was sentenced to 24 years in prison without the right to parole. Upon hearing the judge hand down his sentence, Cameron's eyes widened in shock, and then he burst into tears. The judge revoked Cameron's bond, and he was handcuffed in court and taken into custody to serve his sentence. Cameron's lawyer declared that the judge abused his judicial authority and that he was going to appeal the conviction within the legal deadline, claiming that the stipulated sentence was overestimated and too harsh for a boy who is just starting his adult life. He stated that young people make mistakes and deserve a second chance. Jessica and Lilia's family went public to declare that that conviction finally brought some relief and a sense of justice. They hoped that the sentence would serve as a warning for young drivers, encouraging them to be responsible on public highways and to prevent another family from being destroyed like theirs. From July 2021, 3 months after the sentence, the boy began to receive an unexpected level of attention on social media, especially on TikTok. Several users, the vast majority of whom were women, posted comments in defense of Cameron, asking for a reduction in his sentence because he was very young and very handsome. Yes, it seems unbelievable, but for some people, the boy's beauty is reason enough to believe that he doesn't deserve to spend so much time in prison. Fan clubs were even created in his honor. They sent letters of support and called at the family's home to offer solidarity. On social media, there were more than 100,000 tweets about Cameron, and the videos on TikTok garnered more than 2.2 billion views. However, it was speculated that some TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram accounts were not genuine, but rather bots set up to boost a trending topic. According to a report in the Tampa Bay Times, some of these accounts appeared to originate in the Middle East. Additionally, some online disinformation experts saw similarities with fake accounts paid to influence campaigns. In a newspaper interview, Cheryl, Cameron's mother, stated that some people seemed to have an unhealthy obsession with Cameron, sending letters and calling her in the middle of the night. She said that while all this support was comforting at first, things got scary when people started stalking members of her family on social media and even hacked some of their accounts. This mobilization in favor of Cameron caused a reaction from users who did not agree with the comments and arguments of his supporters. On Twitter, some people made comments repudiating the hashtags raised in favor of the boy. This case raises important questions about our society's beliefs and values. While we can have our own opinions as to whether Cameron's sentence was fair or not, there are many factors to consider when deciding on a person's future. But we cannot lose focus as to who the real victims were in this tragic story.
Hey, você se interessa por crimes reais, serial killers, coisas macabras e tem um senso de humor um tanto quanto sórdido? Se sim, você não está sozinho.
Se você precisa de um lugar recheado de pessoas como você, venha conhecer o podcast Pátria Amada Criminal.
Todas as semanas tentamos entender o pior da humanidade.
Nesse processo a gente ri, chora, fica brava, fofoca, porque afinal de contas é assim que a gente fala quando está entre amigos.
Suas novas melhores amigas trevosas estão aqui, no Pátria Amada Criminal.